Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. How are you guys all doing? It's been a couple of weeks since we've been with you. We let the dust settle after the big win against France, but we are back to take you through all of the news of the last couple of weeks and look forward to Scotland women taking on Italy this weekend. As ever, I am joined by Matt and Alan. Matt, how are you doing, pal?
Yeah, not too bad. Nice to be back. Looking forward to the... Really enjoyed the women's game 2 weeks ago. I'm looking forward to the Italy match as well. It's nice to still have some rugby, even though, say, like the pro teams have been knocked out of Europe. So, should be good.
Yeah. The men's teams have shat the bed, but the women's Six Nations keeps us going. Alan, how are you getting on? It's not a great radio moment, but I can see you've had a haircut, looking very, very sharp post-lockdown.
Yeah, got a cheeky haircut. The guy kept trying to do the side shorter than I wanted. Hairdressers don't seem to understand that. I just want the same length all over. I'm not a sort of high and tight sort of guy. I'm sort of like
quite a loose and fat guy.
Yeah, same length all over, just like half off everything.
What?
Every piece of hair, just cut it in half, and that's fine. And I'll be done.
Any given time, and that is the haircut you'll have.
Yeah.
So I think it is looking quite high and tight. I think it's, yeah.
Yeah, the guy didn't listen to me. He was like, your opinion is incorrect, so I'm going to give you what you should be wanting, which is a high and tight haircut. So.
Well, you've got it, whether you asked for it or not. That's you're looking fantastic. We are going to get into lots of news that's come out in the last few weeks. A nice mixture of rugby-related news and some backroom SRU shenanigans to get you through the week. Before we get going, you can remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod. Join us on Instagram, that's Thistle_Rugby_Pod. Sending us an email is always an absolute treat for us to receive. That's thistlerugby@gmail.com. And please subscribe to our newsletter, which is growing at a pace. That's over on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. It's a bit of a written version of the pod with sort of the weird sights and sounds of Scottish rugby in your inbox every week. So get onto Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. And finally, a mention from our sponsors, continuing through the success of the Six Nations, Rob Mack, the independent financial advisors. They specialize in mortgage management, financial planning, and investments. So if you need any of that stuff, please do get in touch with the guys at Rob Mack, robmack.com. So that is all the admin out of the way. Why don't we kick off with one of our classic, you only get them on the Thistle. We really dive into the business of the SRU. This week came some new sponsorship announcements. They have continued sold out BT Murrayfield lives on for another 3 years. But BT are relinquishing the front of shirt sponsorship with Peter Vardy coming on to the front of the shirt. Alan, you've been Googling an awful lot of stuff about Peter Vardy today. Is he or is he not related to Reg Vardy?
Well, I sort of always remember Reg Vardy from like the Fourth One adverts back in the day.
Yes.
So it turns out that Peter Vardy was part of Reg Vardy, which I'm going to assume was the name of his dad. He sold Reg Vardy and then he started Peter Vardy, but the same sort of business, which he is now sponsoring Scottish rugby. But yeah, and we've now got a new front of shirt sponsor, which is a used car dealership. There's like, what, 15 around Scotland. And to be honest, I'm just really excited about like the branded content that Scottish rugby are going to come out with. Just like Sean Maitland trying to sell a Vauxhall Corsa in Dumfries. Just like that's to be fair though, that's what the people want. So it's no, I mean, look, it's, I think obviously good, clearly BT have sort of stepped back, but I have to admit, you know, I think there was obviously a lot of kind of like, I wouldn't say outrage, but there was almost like a little bit of annoyance when BT took on sort of the stadium rights. And whilst obviously no one in sort of social conversations refers to Murrayfield as BT Murrayfield, I almost feel like the wider sort of general public in Scotland have kind of got used to the whole sort of BT Murrayfield thing and no one really cares anymore. So, you know, if the SRU are able to get kind of half a mil or a mil from having beat the BBC and whatever broadcaster refers to as BT Murrayfield, then, you know, you might as well. So, no, I guess.
And do you think by bringing in Peter Vardy, I mean, obviously we won't know, but will they have sort of increased the amount of money coming in, would you have expected, by getting a new front of shirt?
I think given the COVID pandemic, BT removing themselves from the front of shirt and a brand, you know, whilst, you know, BT aren't a particularly global company, but they're still like quite a large, especially sort of, you know, UK company. Mm-hmm. I would be very surprised if Peter Vardy are paying a similar amount for that front of shirt as BT are. But I think you have to be fair to the SRU that given the current, you know, context in which they're operating in with COVID and sponsorship money sort of going down, it doesn't feel like it's the worst scenario. Keeping BT on as sort of a sponsor and then having someone else on the shirt. So no, it's good. Sold out BT Murrayfield remains. I'm still convinced that Doohan Van der Merwe, and someone needs to prove me wrong on this. I'm convinced that Doohan Van der Merwe thinks the name of the stadium is sold out BT Murrayfield, because he refers to it as sold out BT Murrayfield in situations where either A, you would be referring to the name of the stadium. You know, it's not like he's referring to like the fact it's sold out. It's, you know, it's, yeah. Or if it is a joke, he needs to at least give a smile of some form.
He's not making a joke. He's not got that in his locker. Because I know what you mean. When he sort of refers to, he'd say things like, yeah, we've had a good training session on sold out BT Murrayfield. But ultimately, keeping BT on makes the comms department's life a lot easier, because that's well-worn script is just exactly the same. That's locked in now.
Well-oiled machine. I was looking to see if there was any actual companies called Sold Out that could maybe take it on after BT. There's like a small like video games producer. I just don't know if they've got the coin to pick up the National Stadium of Scotland. But that's the sort of thing I think they should be looking at. Anyway, that is quite enough of SRU sponsorship chat. We look forward to seeing it. The new shirt, when that drops later in the year, we'll get a view of the Peter Vardy sponsorship up front. Back on the pitch, announcement out of Edinburgh today. Back row and former Scotland under-20s captain Connor Boyle has re-signed for Edinburgh. Split loyalties on the pod. Obviously went to school at Stewmell, but played his club rugby at Watson. So we are huge fans of Connor. Matt, big signing for Edinburgh, particularly in that sort of quite crowded back row for him to get a contract?
Yeah, I think so. And particularly given Rory Darge and maybe to a lesser extent, Ali Miller have been sent across to Glasgow There was quite a lot of faith in Boyle. When he sort of played in his preseason games for Edinburgh, where he's sort of had probably the most exposure, he's always looked really good. And he is still only 21 as well, which is kind of quite easy to forget, because I think he was captain of the under-20s when he was only 18. So he's a guy that's sort of come through quicker than expected, maybe. And hopefully next year, or maybe during the Rainbow Cup that we'll come on to talk about, we actually get to see him start a few games at that highest level and see whether he's got enough to mix it. Because definitely at the under-20 level, at least, he seemed to be able to really hold his own against the other Six Nations sides and was always the standout player.
Yeah, absolutely. That was something that Richard Cockerell picked out. I'm just reading his quotes now. He says, "We're really excited to see Connors continue his development in a world-class positional group. He's a hard-working local lad." I do think they copy and paste a lot of these across, these quotes. I just think there's a lot of platitudes in these quotations.
I wonder, now that Bradbury, not that the game against Racing was a particularly great outing, but potentially that looks like they might be trying to move Bradbury into the second row.
Yeah.
It feels like Connor Boyle and Luke Crosby now will be the two people that are sort of deputising for Richie and Watson when they're away.
Yeah, absolutely. Just reading a little bit more of this press release, he is currently studying towards a degree in international business management. So he's hot on the heels of Nathan Bombrus. You can see him taking that international business role at the SRU in a few years' time after his career. That's just the SRU pipeline all the way through.
Sort of tangentially talking about Edinburgh, I know we sort of never had a podcast post that Edinburgh Racing game.
Oh, yeah.
But there was sort of this narrative sort of post that match that this like Racing pack or the Racing team in general were like this sort of like group of, you know, like the Harlem Globetrotters of rugby, and that the pack was like a group of absolute kind of savage monsters. And I was sort of having a look back this week at the team, and the sort of Racing pack, it's sort of, I think actually when you look at it, you strip away Racing, you strip away those backs, it's actually just like quite an okay, like it's a good pack, but it's nothing sort of amazing. It's like the 6, 7, and 8 for Racing, Diallo, Chausnay, and Joseph are three French back rows who don't have one France cap between them. Then they've got Bernard Leroux and Donna Karine. Donna Karine's 37, and they're Bernard Leroux. Obviously, Camille Chat is a freak. And
Leroux is a very good player.
He is a good player, but, you know, he is better than Bradbury. But at the same time, you know, it's not like this team of absolute superstars. And, you know, I think I just look at that sort of, especially that back five of the Racing pack. And I think actually, when you look at that comparison to the Edinburgh team, which was Bradbury, Gilchrist, Richie, Watson and Matter, all internationalists, you know, quite a couple of them trying to push in for the Lions. You look at the score, you know, 56-3. And actually, when you look at the match, and, you know, it wasn't like it was, you know, a tight contest in the forwards and it was the Racing backs kind of tearing it up. You know, a lot of it was that the Racing pack were really battering the Edinburgh pack. And a lot of people like, you know, Cherry and Schoeman were getting actually pretty schooled. It's actually just a bit disappointing when I think you look at it in terms of how easily dominated they were by a pack that I don't think is actually that far ahead of them on paper.
I've actually always thought that with Racing, because when you looked at the Champions Cup final last year, when you compared them to Exeter, particularly in the pack, I agree. I think people like Donnacha Ryan, you look at it and go, well, you know, Munster didn't want to keep him. Ireland didn't want to keep him in the country. There does seem to be something about them where the sum of the parts is, or that they're stronger than the sum of the parts. But the other thing I found interesting about the match was afterwards, and Cockrell's done this a bit recently, he hasn't even seemed angry about a bad performance. He's sort of been pretty resigned to things, maybe not excuses, but after the Racing match, he was making the point that the Racing budget is far better than Edinburgh's. Well, you know, we've known that since the first day of the season. This isn't a new thing that's come along, and you have to find a way to overcome that. And Edinburgh have in the past, you know, a couple of years. And I think in the Pro 14 this year, which has been a complete disaster really for Edinburgh, post-match, he's just said, well, we've got players missing. We don't have the same budgets as other teams, so we can't do anything about it. And yeah, I don't know. I just don't think, maybe it's just me, but it doesn't seem as if he is angry enough about these things, and whether he does maybe have his eye slightly on other roles. I don't know if that's unfair.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know it's a very different tone to the one he would have taken, I think, 2 years ago if they lost in that manner. Yeah. And I don't know whether it's he is just like checked out and he's just looking for the next gig, or whether actually, you know, maybe he's just sensed something within the group that, you know, ultimately, given everything that's happened over the last 12 months and given, you know, the fact that the team has been sort of decimated by kind of the requirements of the national team, it's just probably not the right place to do it. It'd be interesting to see how they sort of come back with the Rainbow Cup. And I think, I don't know, it's difficult to sort of assess it. I think at the same time, I think Edinburgh and Glasgow have been poorer than they should have been this season.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, I'm sure both coaches have stated that, you know, ultimately, they can't be judged on what's happened over the last sort of 12 months, just given all the issues they've had to face.
I think that's fine. I would agree with that. It's when I think Cockerell's the main culprit. I don't think Wilson does it. And Rennie didn't really do it either. Just constantly citing the fact that Edinburgh have a lower budget. And you'd like to think that Cockerell was aware of that when he took the job and understood the constraints that he'd be operating under. And that's the challenge of the role. There's nothing that will change that, and there's nothing that's going to change throughout the course of his time at Edinburgh. So, yeah, it just seems a bit odd to me.
Since we are touching on those games back in Europe, very disappointing that Glasgow threw away what looked like quite a decent chance to maybe turn over Montpellier with that red card from TJ Ioane. And we were talking a little bit about this on WhatsApp, that you look at that semi-final draw for the Challenge Cup, and Glasgow could have been there. If they'd beaten Montpellier, they would have gone and played Benetton.
Yeah,
it seems like a huge missed opportunity, but I guess it's just where both those pro sides are at the moment.
And I don't think, you know, I don't know what was quite off with the Glasgow performance, because, you know, it wasn't, I think in the pack, especially, there's quite a few of the team, you know, people like Xander Ferguson, who really had the better of the sort of opposite man. And actually, you know, Glasgow had a few opportunities to get tries on the board, and they just didn't seem to be able to convert anything when they got inside the 22. So yeah, we now get to move on to the glorious Rainbow Cup.
Yes, which is not without its problems, shall we say. Reports in South Africa broke probably a couple of days ago that the teams were not, at the moment, being granted their visas to come to the UK. The South African franchises had planned to bubble themselves down in Bristol throughout the tournament, but the Home Office have not granted them visas. Presumably because they're coming from South Africa of South African variant fame, I should have thought. But the marketing around it has been quite dispiriting. What we do know is happening is that Edinburgh are playing Glasgow again twice and Zebra once in the coming weeks, and then there's a lot of TBCs after that. Have we seen enough 1872 Cup action this year, Matt?
Can you ever see enough 1872 Cup? I mean, it's one of the most exciting. It's the oldest rugby tournament out there, isn't it? It's the oldest rugby cup.
It feels like COVID has been nothing but 1872 fixtures, with like occasionally punctuated by a Scotland match. There's just sort of been like local derbies.
Yeah. On one hand, I get it that.
Yeah, of course.
Short notice, the logistical difficulties of, you know, even maybe playing matches in England make that unrealistic. You know, we were having a discussion, and we put it out on Twitter whether there was an opportunity to do something a bit different, like come up with some pretty scratch district type sides of that kind of thing, which I think with a bit more time and a bit more thought could be quite a cool concept. But I appreciate it'd be very difficult to do short notice and make sure that the teams are evenly matched, and that you would probably have to draw upon some Super Six players and academy guys who might not be ready. But yeah, the fixture list now of Zebre and then back-to-back 1872 Cups, one of which doesn't count towards the Cup itself.
Well, you can't have four 1872 Cup games, Matt. That'd be crazy, right? It can only be three.
Oh, it's a traditional tournament.
You have to preserve the integrity of the tournament. Yeah,
exactly. So there's a third... The third match is the decider, and then the next one is what? That just counts towards the Rainbow Cup.
Yeah, it's just a regular Rainbow Cup match, which has no bearing on the 1872 Cup the week before. So, but it is what it is. We were chatting about what the other options are, because you know I really struggle to see a scenario in which these four South African teams come over and start playing matches against not only obviously Scottish and Welsh, but also Irish opposition, which is, you know, obviously managed by a completely different government. And I think you're right. How difficult, you know, should it be that difficult to set up some form of kind of like inter-Scotland, inter-district tournament? You know, ultimately the SRU A manages all the players within Scotland, and also, you know, ultimately I'm sure a lot of these Super 6 and under 20s players would be absolutely chomping at the bit to get experience at that level. And whilst obviously I don't think you want to put under 20s or Super 6 players into an environment where they're playing against all, you know, pros or playing against sort of an Ulster, but ultimately in an environment where it's this kind of mix between your kind of seasoned pros and kind of more youngsters coming through, it feels like quite a good environment. And I genuinely do think within Scotland, especially because there hasn't been any Premiership or National League or Super Six rugby for the last 12 months, I really do think there'd be quite a big kind of desire for it. It's maybe more of like a COVID testing issue.
I think that's the issue, because Glasgow have played the, like maybe Glasgow A side, B side have played the under 20s before as part of the under 20s preparation for a world championship or whatnot. So I think from a welfare perspective, it's probably okay to have those 18 to 20 year olds playing within maybe front row is a bit different.
I guess the other big thing is, it's a money thing, isn't it? You're not going to be able to sell the rights to an inter-district championship to that many people.
They've got nothing else.
But sell to Super Sport in South Africa. Be like, look, guys, this is what we can give you as a replacement product.
Should the Thistle set up its own like streaming service? We'll take on the inter-district championships.
I think we should. Just, what, one of us with an iPhone just like streaming live onto our Twitter account.
I think we could make a better website than Premier Sports. The website looks like it's designed by a sort of 15-year-old a school project.
Agreed. Just like, I think us three, a drone, maybe like a Wix.com website.
Yeah.
All footage from drone. 100% drone footage. That would be our USP. Wow. Look, I'm sure there's plenty of high net worth investors out there listening to the pod right now. Get in touch if you want to sort of ruin behind Thistle TV. We'd be very, very interested in taking that forward. So that is the Rainbow Cup. We will keep an eye on what is going to happen there. But what we do know is we get that sweet 1872 Cup action back again very, very soon. Also very, very soon, Scotland women, their second game of the Six Nations campaign coming up. They were on the end of a fairly heavy loss to favourites England at the weekend. Matt, I know you were watching that and providing a little bit of commentary on online. I mean, it looked like a pretty tough result on paper, but does represent some progress for the women, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. I think you need to provide some context around it that Scotland only have a handful of pros against England who are fully professional. And that difference in professionalism, I think, came through in a lot of the organisation. Rather than, and maybe the conditioning side of things, rather than England necessarily having far better players. And it was also Scotland's first proper, the players' first proper bit of rugby since that France draw last October, I think. It was, I actually think the scoreline doesn't quite reflect the game. I think Scotland battled really well. It was just I don't think they were used to having their skills put under as much pressure as England applied. The English defence was really quick. So particularly when Scotland were trying to set up exit plays out of their own 22, it must have been charged down like four or five times in the first 20 minutes. They just couldn't get out of their own half at all. But when they did, actually, you know, the set piece was very good and they were making life difficult for England. It was just, as I say, the skills under pressure and a bit of maybe the kicking as well was kind of the difference. And when England get front foot ball with the players they have, I think it's difficult for anyone to stop them, really.
I watched England versus Italy at the weekend, actually, and there was shades of like similar things, I guess, in the England and Italy, the gulf in class in certain areas. But certainly in the first half, Italy fronted up really, really well, and England got two runaway scores from just skills breakdowns. So a drop pass or a missed pass in the midfield, and somebody like Emily Scarrett, who's like an amazing professional, is really, really quick. She just picks that up and runs 60 meters, and it's that sort of stuff that England seem to be able to do. And then once they get into that dominant position and get a bit of ball in the second half against a tiring side, they seem to be able to streak away, and 60 points gets racked up quite quickly, essentially.
Yeah.
But Scotland and Italy this weekend, usually very sort of quite nip and tuck games between the two sides. What can we be looking forward to? Rachel Malcolm, Scotland captain, injured and not coming in. So what's the team looking like?
Yeah, well, it's Scotland versus Italy in the women's game is actually very different to the men's in recent years, because it's not been, they've been far tighter affairs, and actually I think Italy have a better record over the last two or three years.
Italy have won the last three,
yeah, including quite a comfortable win at Scotstoun in 2019, I think. So although Scotland would have been targeting this as their more likely victory, it's not the same, nearly the same gimme as the men would have. Rachel Malcolm is, I think she injured her knee in like the first minute and then kept playing. She's a big loss, but I actually think that Emma Wassell, the other her partner in second row, was one of Scotland's better players. Fronted up really well, was really commanding in the lineout. And I think Scotland will have a bit more of a chance to attack, because in patches through the likes of kind of Hannah Smith and Lisa Thompson, particularly in centres, showed that there is quite a lot of ability there to break the gain line and to cause defensive problems. And as I say, I don't think Italy's line speed will be nearly as quick as England's. And yeah, if you look at the results from both the England games, like the Scotland match was a little bit closer, so maybe they can take quite a lot of confidence in that going into the weekend.
Absolutely, and that is at Scotstoun this Saturday. I believe it's being shown on the red button of iPlayer, because they couldn't replace Cash in the Attic, sadly. A real shame that they didn't manage to get that scheduling sorted. We had hoped to interview somebody from the women's team tonight, but Dodson said no, unfortunately. We asked Mark, but he didn't fancy it, so it's a bit of a shame. But we hope to have somebody from the women's team on in the weeks to come. But other big news, jumping around a little bit in tonight's episode, Lions back in the men's game. British and Irish Lions tour this summer. Two Scots have already been called up to the squad, or at least one Scot and one pseudo-Scot. Gregor Townsend and Steve Tandy were announced this week as Warren Gatland's is members of Warren Gatson's coaching team. Alan, how good could that be for Scotland's representation on the tour?
Probably not going to have a massive impact. I think the general consensus seems to be that Gatland, even in, up till sort of like, you know, up to the, before the Six Nations, probably had his squad sort of, you know, 80-85% of the way there. And ultimately, I think where Tandy and Townsend specifically are really going to have influence are probably around the sort of edges or on those sort of key 50-50 decisions. And I think one of the interesting things we have seen is Chris Harris's odds of going on the Lions tour have dropped from about what appears to be sort of 10 to 1 at the end of the Six Nations. I actually put a fiver on him at about 6 to 1. And it looks like he's gone down till about 2 to 1. And I think, you know, obviously I'm sure a bit of that's just people putting on money, but I wonder whether, given just, you know, how, you know, lauded he's been for his sort of defensive capabilities, but also kind of what he's been able to do in attack for Scotland, and just the fact that clearly Tooney and Tandy are both massive fans of him, it feels like that's the sort of, you know, sort of area where...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You know, he can cover center/wing, where he's going to be part of that conversation. And it feels like it's a sort of area that where maybe if they hadn't been in the room, he wouldn't have got potentially got on that plane, but actually with them in his corner and able to kind of give a bit more insight to what he's like as a character and as a player, that's the sort of situation where he might then just make that jump into the squad.
I think that it's potentially best for us is Finn Russell, actually, from a Scottish perspective, because I think that clearly there are doubts from Gatland about, or if, maybe from just the general like non-Scottish rugby public about his maybe temperament and ability to manage games. And I think that with Townsend as your attack coach, Gatland presumably has to trust him a lot with, you know, backing his calls and backing his instincts. And I think that if there's one player that Townsend is going to maybe like almost stake his reputation on or draw like a real line in the sand and say, this is the one I won't budge on because, you know, I think we need to maybe take a bit of a risk on him, but the things he can do are so spectacular that I think his position has strengthened a lot from maybe a couple of weeks ago.
I have a theory that behind the scenes, Tooney and Finn still fucking hate each other.
I think you're right, but I think Townsend appreciates how good he is and how important he is to Scotland. So,
agreed.
I don't think he's going to hold a grudge against him going into the Lions if he still picks him for Scotland.
I think the Finn fallout has been really good for Gregor Townsend's narrative as well. It has allowed him to be like, I've grown. I have learned my lessons. I'm now a really cool, chilled out guy. Thanks very much to Finn. It's given him like an extra layer to his narrative, which he couldn't access before.
That's what it's all about. So
perhaps that's why he's in the squad. He's in the coaching ticket.
Gatland's going to be like, Tooney, should I bring Finn? And he'd be like, absolutely no fucking way. He's a complete asshole. And then Finn's going to be like, why don't I get picked? And Tooney will be like, sorry, man, Gatland. It was I try my best. Gatland was insisting that you weren't allowed to come on the tour. Mm. It'd be interesting though for Finn. You know, I think probably we underestimate how much rugby Gatland and sort of broader Lions team watch. I imagine they are going to be watching wrestling in the top 14, but At the same time, them not making the Champions Cup semi-finals just takes, removes him from another kind of high-pressure situation where he can prove himself, which he wasn't able to do completely in the Six Nations. Now, he had moments against England and moments against France, but I don't think anyone objectively can look at that Six Nations and say that Finn Russell played himself into the Lions team.
I think that's absolutely right. I'm just looking at Ian McGeekin has written for The Telegraph his 36-man Lions squad featuring seven Scotland players: Sutherland, Turner, Watson, Price, Russell, Harris, and Hogg. I guess jumping off from there, what does, and Matt, I'll come to you first, what does good look like now for Scotland's selection in this Lions squad? Is seven completely outlandish? You know, would you be happy with four? What's where do you think your head's at in terms of good?
I think before Townsend and Tandy were confirmed, I was almost fearing the worst and thinking that Scotland would get four tops, really, but wasn't, you know, 100% certain about that. I think five would be, it would be a very good result. I think it's just so competitive, and particularly if Gatland is only going to take this 36-man squad, like some class players are going to miss out, not just from Scotland.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, I that kind of 5 to 7 range, maybe 7 feels a bit optimistic, but could be quite a sort of realistic outcome.
I have to say, all respect to Geach, I do think George Turner is quite a punchy shout in there.
Yeah, I don't get that one.
Yeah.
The other six, I think Sutherland, Watson, Price, Russell, Harris, and Hogg. I was looking at the odds. I think Price's odds are actually pretty short, but sort of all of the scrum halves who started for their country are. It's almost like there isn't a standout performer. I think Conor Murray's the shortest odds, sort of almost by default.
And it's interesting, you know, one of our sort of mutual friends sort of called us out and said that we focus too much on the Scottish negatives and focus too much on the positives of other players. And I think Price is probably a good example of this, where it's ultimately a fact of the fact we spend a lot more time analysing the Scottish players. But in my head, all I can really remember of Price's Six Nations is the moments where he made mistakes, whether it's a Toji charge down or that kick in that Wales game. Whereas you compare it to sort of Conor Murray, and I just sort of focused around that England match where he had such a great game, and sort of forget that actually earlier in the tournament he was, you know, essentially dropped right for Gibson Park. And, you know, I think Price is actually an interesting one where actually since the Six Nations, the more I thought about it, I actually think he's probably got a better chance than I originally thought. I think he potentially can bring something kind of quite good to that team that's a bit different from the other scrum halves. And I do think, you know, there's no other scrum half in the home nations that's markedly better than him. And I think, you know, we all think agree that Ben Youngs isn't a better player than Ali Price.
Not at the moment.
And I think Ali Price is one that I think, you know, potentially has a more likely chance of going than Finn Russell. You know, I almost feel like the narrative is going a little bit against Finn at the moment, especially now that he's just not been able to compete in these Champions Cup matches.
I suppose the benefit of that, the Champions Cup's an interesting one, but I suppose Johnny Sexton's the only person sort of left competing with Finn in that.
Yeah.
And he got injured and went off after 20 minutes of the quarter, just sort of showing how frail he is.
Yeah. And then annoyingly Byrne came on, and this is the thing,
and was class.
We've discussed this, you know, is Byrne for Leinster is unbelievable, but for some reason Ireland, and there is that difference between these players that again are class at a club level but just aren't able to sort of prove themselves at an international level. And, you know, Finn isn't someone like that. He clearly is an international quality player. And I think actually you look at Hogg, and for some reason there is a massive gulf, I think, between the quality of play Hogg has at an international level versus what he does for Exeter.
Yeah, playing for Scotland does seem to like unlock something in Hoggy.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, like, ultra proud to play for Scotland every time he does it, and it does just seem to like bring something out in him.
Do you think there's any chance that Hogg gets captain of Lions?
I think he might. He might potentially get vice captain.
Yeah.
And I think they will go with the forward and probably be Wyn Jones.
I just wonder whether, I mean, Gatland, did Wyn Jones start the first test in New Zealand? I was there, but I can't remember. It was definitely, Cruz definitely started.
Was it Toji?
Toji didn't start.
Did he not?
So it must have been. It must have been Wyn Jones and Cruz. As I said, I feel like Alan Wyn Jones, you know, completely fair play to him. It's amazing that he was playing in that 0-9 series at 23, but he is holding on for dear life. Like, that guy is about to break. Just like he is incredible. He is what Johnny Gray could be.
Yeah. Do you know who started at 12 in that test?
Ben Teal.
That's nuts. You know who's playing for the Brisbane Broncos now?
Yeah, yeah. Was it Wyn Jones in the row?
Yeah, it was Wyn Jones and Chris, yeah. And that was when Omani was captain, inexplicably.
Yes.
And even we were like, bring back Warburton, this is a joke. Like,
so when I went up to Omani afterwards and was like, great game. And he was like, I don't know who you are and I do not want to speak to you. He didn't say that, but he looked at me. And that's what it
looked like. So, speaking of narrative, the Steve Tandy narrative is absolutely unbelievable. Sacked as Ospreys coach in 2018, went to the Waratahs for a bit. Then, when he got appointed as the Scotland defence coach, we were all pretty underwhelmed. And his record as defence coach from a point when, I think Matt Taylor must go down as one of the worst coaches we've ever had. His defensive record in 2015 Six Nations was 2014, where I think he was defense coach, was 27 points a game.
Yeah.
Like, and last year we were down to 59 in total. So, which was the best in the Six Nations, and then 91 this year, which was second best. And now he's Steve Tandy, obviously Lions coach. It's an unbelievable story, really.
Yeah, to be fair, I couldn't really know too much about him. The fact he was made head coach of the Ospreys at 32, which is probably too early for anyone, right? Like, and it's kind of a, you know, and as you said, you know, obviously he stayed there at the Ospreys for a while. Rogue little move to the Waratahs, and then clearly I don't know what his relationship was with the SOU or who he knew in camp, or whether, I guess, it was someone like Danny Wilson was there already and was able to put sort of kind of vouch for him. But yeah, clearly sort of come in and I think has been able to bring something to that setup that probably Tooney just wasn't able to offer as part of that as a sort of head coach.
I think from what I remember with Tandy, he was appointed as like the cheap option, because remember the Ospreys went through that period of having, you know, Marty Holler and people like that. And then I don't know who was funding that, but they clearly pulled out and they were like, let's get this 32-year-old in on the cheap. But no, it's a pretty cool story, really.
No. And I guess it's interesting, you know, thinking through, I'd be so surprised if Gatland stays with any more Lions tours past this one. It feels like this has got to be the last for him. But I guess looking at, you know, Australia 2025, you've got to think Tooney's in the hot seat for that head coach role. You know, I mean, as long as he's still with Scotland, I guess, you know, potentially post 2023 World Cup, if they don't get out of the group, which is a massive possibility, he might not stay with Scotland. But probably him or Andy Farrell are the two main people up for it.
You would have thought so.
Do you want to Do a quiz, or we got anything else, Dave, on the agenda?
I don't know if you guys realize my internet cut out for about 3 minutes there. But yeah, if you guys were just chatting, that's absolutely. I came back in, and you were just happily talking about Steve Tandy,
I didn't notice that, but we just kept going, so I think it's fine.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit of a rambling episode so far, so I reckon we just end on a quick quiz and then get it out there.
Sounds good. Say cool. Quick, mate. I've got like 12 questions here.
Okay. Nice. Right, I'll do a wee link from Lions. I can tidy it up. Well, the squad is announced on the 6th of May, so there's going to be plenty of Lions chat until then. If you do hate yourself, go onto Twitter and post your Lions squad or proposed Lions 15, and just lots of people that you don't know will shout at you and tell you that you're wrong. So always happy to see that sort of stuff happening online. But Alan, you're going to see us out tonight with a quiz.
Yes, we are. So I've taken inspiration from another podcast and gone for a nicknames quiz.
Okay.
So I've got 15 nicknames. Of Scottish rugby players. So I'm going to bash through all 15. Some of them are super, super easy, so you should really get them. There's only actually, I think you should be both aiming for double figures, 100%. Okay. I'm going to go through all of them really quickly, and then we'll go back through it, okay? So, right, I mean, the first one is like, this is the easiest thing in the world. So number one, Big Gav.
Is that a nickname?
Number two, yeah, I just love it so much. Number two, the Great White Shark.
Yep.
Number three, Chainsaw. Number four, Basil.
Basil?
Yep, got that.
Number five is Wagga.
Yep.
Yeah.
Number six is Chunk.
Yeah.
Number seven is Border Terrier.
What?
Border Terrier.
Are these nicknames you've made up?
No, these are all either.
Is that what we're supposed to do? We're trying to identify the ones that you've made up for people.
No, these are all either on Wikipedia or from another such trusted online source.
Okay.
Number eight is Meatball.
Yeah.
Number nine is Toucan Dan. Number 10 is Rambo. Number 11 is Mossy.
Yeah.
Number 12 is Fuzzy.
Yeah.
Number 13 is Old Boy.
Old Boy.
Old Boy. 14 is Santa.
Oh, yes.
And 15 is Boom Boom.
Boom boom.
Boom boom.
So that's your 15 right there.
All right.
So number one, Big Gav. Assuming you've both got this.
Gavin Kerr.
Number two, the Great White Shark. Dave, what you got?
Jason White.
Matt?
Jason White as well.
It's John Jeffrey.
It's John Jeffrey, isn't it? There,
it's John Jeffrey.
Shit, that is embarrassing.
All right, Matt, number three, the Chainsaw.
I'm sure that Jason White used to get called the Great White Shark as well.
Did he? Did he, though? I think we've said it on the pod before.
Yeah, no, it is John Jeffrey, isn't it? Number three is Brendan Laney.
Chainsaw, Brendan Laney, yeah. Cool.
Two all. Now, Dave, Basil.
I've got absolutely no idea. I temporarily went down a route where I was trying to think of like Basil, famous Basils, famous Basil Fawlty, and then I tried to think if there was someone that could be like that, but no, I've got no idea on who Basil is.
Have you got this?
Yeah, it's Brian Redpath.
It is Brian Redpath.
And then I was reading that is named after Basil Brush.
Yes.
And then
Brian Redpath liked the adventures of a certain foxy puppet, reading it from a Guardian article.
Well, I was in the right. I was in the right track. Just the wrong famous, you know, fictional Basil.
Apparently, I read somewhere it's either because you know how his obviously has Cam Redpath has one son, then his other son Murray Redpath has just been named in the Scotland of the 20s.
Mm.
And yeah. Apparently, it's either Cam Redpath or Murray Redpath. Some of their teammates called him Boom Boom, as in like the mini version of Basil Brush.
Well, yeah, we just ruined number 15.
Oh shit. Oh, well, I got that as well then. I did know it.
So Cameron Redpath's called Boom Boom.
I didn't even have that as an answer, by the way. I had no idea.
So Basil Brush had a catchphrase, which was ha 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 boom boom.
Yeah, that's pretty well known, isn't it?
I don't know. Yeah. I've never watched it.
Rob Brydon does a good impression of it in The Trip.
And what? So they call Cameron Redpath Boom Boom?
Correct. So that's number 15.
All right. Fair enough.
All right, so fourth, we'll give you both Boom Boom then. So it's 4-3 to Matt. Dave, Wagga.
Nathan Hines.
You got that, Matt?
Yep.
Chunk?
Alan Jacobson.
I'm assuming you have that, Matt.
Yeah.
Or I'll give you a go to you, Matt, on this. Border Terrier, what have you got?
I wasn't sure, but is it? I was thinking it was maybe Gary Armstrong.
Dave, have you got an answer?
Yeah, Gary Armstrong.
That's such bullshit. It is Gary Armstrong there.
Yeah, I do. I've always known the Border Terrier very well.
Where have you got that from? I've never heard of that.
The Border Terrier?
I thought he was like the junkyard dog.
I mean, you can have two nicknames, can't you? On Wikipedia, it says his nickname is the Border Terrier. That's all I've got for you.
Johnny Wilkinson apparently called Guy Armstrong the junkyard dog.
That's fair. Two quite a bit aggressive, but quite cool nicknames, I guess.
They're quite like long. You can't like use them in sort of like quite like passing. But yeah. Oh, here he is.
Oh, Border Terrier.
Oi, boy, oi, junkyard dog. How are you? It's a bit of shit, isn't it?
Dave, Meatball.
Well, I think this is where we sort of we diverge from common parlance, isn't it? I'm pretty sure that's what everyone calls a lot of people call Duncan Weir.
Matt?
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah, I think his nickname was Meatball, and then I think we called him Spud for a little bit, and then I think Spud turned to Pudding.
We called him Pudding.
And now he's the Pudding.
I think quite a lot of the Glasgow players call him the Bog Brush as well because of his hair. Like when his hair is short, it's quite like spiky. They call him like Bog Brush or like Bog Trotter and stuff like that.
There you go. And now, does anyone have Toucan Dan?
I mean,
now you say it again, it's somewhere in the back of my mind. Have you got it? Can we have a clue?
Simon Danielli.
Currently part of the SOU juggernaut as a coach.
Mike Blair.
Originally born in New Zealand.
No idea.
Played in the centre.
Sean Lineen?
Sean Lineen is correct. It's I was reading, I found it from a rogue Alistair Reid article in the Times from 2017, where he says, Lineen adds that he also couldn't hold his drink, another cardinal sin in rugby. In fairness, this admission is true. It's not for nothing that you end up with the nickname Toucan Dan. I just don't know where, you know, his name's not Dan, but I guess, you know, if you can't drink, then that's the name you get. So, yeah, Sean Lineen, Toucan Dan, Jose.
Fair enough.
Rambo.
Stuart McNally.
Yeah.
Mossy.
Patterson.
Chris Patterson.
Which is supposedly named after some sort of, like, cartoon dinosaur. I don't know. Fuzzy Bear, Chris Fazzaro. Oh, God, fuck's sake.
It is Chris Fazzaro.
No, I don't think anyone's getting Old Boy.
Old Boy.
To give you a bit of... So this lad was both played rugby union and rugby league. Originally born in Middlesbrough in 1980. Got five caps for Scotland between 2000 and 2001. He also played for Scotland at rugby league 10 times.
And
no. He played rugby for the Northampton Saints, Warriors, Border Reavers, and then rugby league for Hull Kingston Rovers and Featherstone Rovers.
So that Andy Craig guy?
No.
Oh, fuck.
I've got no idea.
His
you've given a lot of clues there. It feels we should know who that is.
His last name is a type of iron.
A type of iron?
Well, a type of metal.
Yeah.
No idea. Who is it?
John Steele.
John Steele. I honestly could I could not pick John Steele out of a lineup. No way.
I mean, that's the thing is, I don't think most people could. But you know, fair play to him. You know, rugby union and rugby league.
Yeah, it's impressive. He must be an impressive athlete. John Steele rugby. I'm looking him up now.
And then
doesn't even have a photo on his Wikipedia page. That's not helpful to me.
And the last one, Dave. I'll go to you first. Santa.
It's that bloke that you guys know from Stu Mel.
I claim no familiarity.
And I've never met him.
Any stories anyone's ever told.
Yeah, and Phil Godman told us some terrible stories about him. Craig Smith.
Yeah, Craig Smith. Yes. Santa. What's the story for public consumption is, what was the team sheet that he was put down as Santa for, Matt?
It was a Stu Mel second 15 game, and Craig Smith, when he was at Edinburgh, would come and coach the scrum and stuff at Stu Mel. And maybe he might have been in the draft with Stu Mel, I can't remember. So he occasionally played for the first. But the second 15 had this crunch game against, I can't remember who, but if they didn't win, they'd be relegated from the top reserve league. So they decided to roll out Craig Smith at number 8, but to sort of steer off any people looking and seeing the name of the team sheet and recognize it, they just wrote Santa on the team sheet at number 8 that they gave to the referee. So that nickname lived on.
Well, there you go. And then the number 15 was Boom Boom.
The perfect crime, Santa. No one's ever going to look into it. Yeah, and then Boom Boom was the last one. So Cam Redpath. So
you missed Blade.
What, for, Thompson?
Mike Blair.
Yes, I didn't know where that came from.
Was it not something like he like had like a private collection of weapons?
I mean, that's not what I expected.
Like, I don't think I pulled that out of nowhere. On the Lions tour, they got the nickname in 2009.
So I do remember it's in the it's in the DVD. There's something about Mike Blair's nickname.
So supposedly, he claimed in an interview that his nickname at school had been Blade, which was a lie, and then it stuck.
Like you.
Look, Matt was there. There was a very charismatic Zimbabwean coach who was coaching both me and Matt, and he took a particular liking to me. And he recognized me at the time, this slightly overweight prop, trying to make the transition to center. He sensed and could see that there was an inside center who could cut the line like no other. And he christened me with the name Blade. And from then on, I played center ever since.
To be fair to Ian Noble, he played for Zimbabwe at the 1991 Rugby World Cup.
Good man. A great man. As you say, could see talent.
Do you remember I don't know if this is that interesting, but at the end of each session, he'd get all the guys in a group, and he'd kick a rugby ball up in the air as high as he could, and he'd be like, you can only leave if you catch the ball. So there was like this like scrum of players to like get the ball. I'd be like fighting over each other and stuff to go and get in the car with their parents. Brutal.
Yeah, my mum's just like desperate to leave because we got a dinner appointment, and he's like, not till he catches the ball.
All these high balls.
He was also coach of Irvine for a little bit. Sort of rogue appointment.
Yeah. He played for County and Hawks. He's obviously a handy player. No.
Right. I think we can probably call it a night there, lads, where we're just sort of diverting ourselves into the Wikipedias of lesser-known Scotland rugby coaches. Thank you very much for joining us. We will be back in the coming weeks as we build up to that Lions squad announcement and as the excitement builds to the Rainbow Cup. I just cannot wait for the 1872. But until then, please keep in touch with us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod. On Instagram, thistle_rugby_pod. And send us an email if you fancy it, thistlerugby@gmail.com. And subscribe to the newsletter on Substack. Until then, thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.